So, hi everyone, and welcome back to our podcast. I'm Diana Maria Georgescu, and I will be your host today. Last time we spoke about resilience, empathy, emotional intelligence, and unique challenges and opportunities for women in business with Kari Mattila, a CEO, coach, mentor, and emotional intelligence advisor in Finland and across the globe. In this episode, we will tackle new key topics that deeply resonate with entrepreneurs everywhere, such as financial stability versus risk tolerance, cultural differences, innovative thinking, and business failure. The main goal of the entire discussion is to take valuable lessons from Israel and Sweden's innovative and mature business cultures and adapt them to the Romanian business context. Our special guest today is Aurélie Pratt, a business coach and mentor and a strategy and marketing consultant deeply rooted in the healthcare sector. With a career spanning over 25 years, Aurélie dedicated herself to driving brands towards excellence, leveraging her experience and passion for innovation to create impactful strategies and compelling marketing initiative and to nurture businesses that aspire to make a tangible impact in their respective industries. Already well-established record allows her to guide small and medium businesses enterprises in the complex journey of the market penetration and strategic development. She's skilled in go-to-market strategy, branding strategy, global marketing management, market and business planning, company and product positioning, and international business growth. Throughout Aurélie's career, she has been privileged to advise many international clients, tailoring each engagement to meet diverse and unique challenges. Prior to her consulting ventures, she served in high-impact commercial roles, refining companies' business approaches to establish a dominant presence in their market. I am truly honored and to welcome a business coach and mentor in the strategy and marketing consultant who brings broader business and cultural knowledge to the table today. Welcome, Aurélie, to our podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me here. It's really an honor for me to participate.
Well, let's start the discussion with a bit of background from Romanian market. In Romanian right now, there is this new trend of people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, even thinking about leaving the safe environment that the status of employees right now gives them and launching a new business, basically transitioning to from financial stability to risk tolerance. Based on your business experience, which are the main things the future entrepreneur should take into account when assuming this kind of transitions already?
Well, it's a very interesting question because if we talk about cultures in general, I can tell you that looking at different countries, the different countries I worked in, and also other countries that I'm interested in and I'm looking at, it's the mere fact that you say in Romania, it's now people who were employed already in companies that are seeking entrepreneurship. And it's very different because in some other countries, like Israel, for instance, and some of the people in Sweden, people start with startups very early on. You would have very young people, almost just out of universities, that start their lives in startups. So, of course, it's a very different journey when you have that. It's different when you have some experience in business, some experience in companies. And when you're just a student or just starting your life and you have this new baby that is the startup that you're building. So let's look at both sides. But if you say that in Romania, it's mainly people that already have an experience at work, then this is a little bit of an interesting case because I think people come. When they have this experience, they come with a different set of values and a different expectation to building a startup. The first thing I would say, they come with a bit more confidence, okay? Not overly confidence, which is good sometimes, which is not good in other times, but it's good sometimes. And they come with a set of experiences that they can bring into the startup. They can say what they want to do, like they had in their experience, and what they don't. But definitely, what I would say to any entrepreneur when they start the startup is think carefully, how long can you run with your idea before you hit the wall? Meaning, how long can you run in terms of the financial abilities that you have, in terms of the uncertainty that you can, sustain within yourself mentally and, in reality with other people? Think about your family. Think about what kind of support system you have around you. Will it be hard for them, or are they excited just like you? And think about really what you want to take from your experience as an employee, from your experience in other businesses, whether it's the way that people were managed, the way that the strategy was developed, what did they do right, what did they do wrong? So that is a question that people who have the experience, like you say in Romania, can start their journey with. Unlike people that come out of the university who just, just jump into the water without even thinking most of the times. But I think older people or people with more experience, they can allow themselves to plan ahead a bit better. And that's the first thing I would tell them. Plan ahead. Think about all the perspectives, all the aspects of the business that you're building. Think about your idea, think about the difficulties that it can encounter, and try to plan as much as possible ahead. And also, the one very important thing that I would say is be ready to change that plan, because there's almost 100% chance that you will have to change it, that you will meet difficulties and challenges that you haven't thought of. But starting a business like that, starting a startup, you have to have the flexibility to change. And you have to have the flexibility, which sometimes you don't have as an employee, but now you will have as an entrepreneur, the ability to really think on your feet, do the right changes, move forward quicker, do the adjustments that you can while you can. So in a nutshell, that's my recommendation.
Yeah, that's very good. And I think all the guests we had in our podcast say the same thing. Plan ahead. Who knows why? Probably because there are a lot of entrepreneurs that they don't use planning their budgeting, planning their
Exactly.
vision, and build actually an
Yes.
action plan to deploy this vision. So thank you for this advice, because it's welcomed from my point of view. And I think as many as us, we will underline the importance of a planning. The
Yes.
soon the entrepreneurs all over the world will understand that this is required when building a business, actually.
Yeah. And I want to say something else about it. You said vision, and that's an interesting perspective, because I think one of the things that is really important for startups is not to lose the vision. You need to have the plan. You need to look at the details. You need to go step by step, that's for sure. And you cannot do without looking at those details. But you have to try not to dive into the details and forget about your dream, because what really sustains most of the startups is the dream. Okay. The ability and your ability as an entrepreneur to portray that dream to investors, to your employees, to your future clients, and other stakeholders in the market. I mean, you have to be able to balance between the dream and the details and day-to-day challenges. And that balance is a fine, it's a fine balance that you need to learn when you start it. But think about it and don't forget it when you start.
Yeah, that's actually what sells your business to the world,
Yes,
your dream
exactly.
behind your vision. Yeah,
Exactly.
very
Exactly.
good point.
And a lot of investors are looking for that excitement, you know. It's the dreamers that can also translate it to something in the reality at that point. That is what attracts the investors eventually.
That's right. Thank you, Aurélie. Very good advice, and thank you for pointing this out. Now, you are based in Sweden, as far as I know.
Yes.
Coming
Yeah.
from a so-called startup nation like Israel, how do
Yes.
you perceive the difference between these two countries, between Israel and Sweden? The difference between their business environments?
It's a good question because this is one of the things that I've been talking about with people for almost 20 years. 20 years ago, I worked with Swedish people in a big startup that became, you know, a company that was sold basically to Johnson and Johnson at the end. And we continued to work together in a startup they built in Sweden 20 years ago. That was long before startups were anything in Israel, in Sweden. It was not a startup nation back then at all. It was very bizarre to have a startup. There was hardly any real, you know, government support for it. It was not at all the style. But they were entrepreneurs and very visionary ones, and we built a startup together. And immediately I could understand the cultural differences between the two countries. And I have to be honest, I even see it today, although it changed a lot in the last 20 years. The Israeli culture, where startups have been, you know, Israel has been the startup nation for many years. And that even at a certain point in the 90s and the early 2000s, Israel was leading the world leader in number of startups every year per capita. It's amazing. I mean, over the US, more than England, more than anything. It was crazy, really. Everyone who had an idea started a startup. And there was a lot of confidence. There's something in the culture, in the Israeli culture, but maybe because it's a young country, maybe because of the way it was built. The culture is very entrepreneurial with everything. You just, you know, you have an idea, you want to do something, you just jump into it. Not always thinking
And
ahead.
planning.
Not planning, yes, that happens very often. You know, there were a lot of starters that were built and also closed down very quickly because of that. But the culture was it's okay to build a startup even if it doesn't succeed. You know, that was the first thing you would do. In Sweden, it's the complete opposite. There's a culture of, you know, conformity. You don't stand out. I mean, today, again, it's a bit different with the younger generation, but I'm talking about 20 years ago. Standing out was not a good thing in Sweden, culturally. You wouldn't be, you know, too successful because other people would be jealous. You know, you should be just successful as much as you need to. Very modest. There's something very nice about that culture on a daily basis because everything is just right. And there's actually a word for it in Swedish, lagom, which is, it doesn't exist in any other language because it's very Swedish. You do the just right, not too much, not too little, you know, very Swedish. That's a very Swedish way of looking. But when you think about entrepreneurial spirit, lagom is what kills it, of course, because you don't want to do anything more than anything, more than anyone else. It's not, there's no, you know, standing out of the crowd. There's no that zest that you need to have, the dream, strong dream and energy that you need to have for a startup. So that was the first thing that I discovered. And it was really interesting to see it. And the more the years pass and, you know, things have changed a lot in Sweden, and now it is the startup nation of Europe, basically per capita, although it's not a big country, it has more or less the same number of people like Israel, it has a lot of startups. There's a lot of support from the government. There's a lot of initiatives. There's a lot of hubs, accelerators, venture builders. It's really beautiful to see it. And people feel confident to go and try. But there is still one thing that is different culturally, and that is the willingness to fail, to sustain failure. In Israel, and I can say it, and every Israeli businessman would agree with me. In Israel, if you haven't failed two, three, four startups, you haven't done anything. You're not really an entrepreneur. It's a mark of honor that you've tried again and again and again, and you only succeeded after having that experience. This is why I think also very young people start with startups, allow themselves to not have any experience and just do it. Because it's okay if it doesn't succeed, they'll close it down and continue to the next thing. In Sweden, wow, failure is really bad. And if you had a company and had to close it down or it went bankrupt, doesn't matter why, it could be for very good reasons. But if you've been involved in one of these, and this is what happens, it will be a bad mark on your reputation for years. They wouldn't even remember your successes. They'll remember your failure. Even if you had 10 successful startups and one failure, that failure would shine. And that is a culture that I see changing a little bit. There's some progress with that in the younger generation, among the young generation that are more open to the American way and other countries and other cultures. But there's still something very conservative in the way that they look at startups here and at the way they look at failure. Because failure is still like a no-no. So that is one of the most prominent differences in the two cultures.
That's amazing that you underline this difference, because indeed in Romania, failure it's not easy to deal with.
I'm sure, yes.
It's difficult for people to recognize that they are failed, or they actually their business didn't work out for different reasons. And that's why I would like to insist a bit more on this area. Have you personally experienced business failure already, or mentored businesses in failure stage? Because I would like you to tell us a little bit more about the useful lessons that our audience could learn of.
So, of course, being an Israeli, I experienced failure. I've been involved in a few startups, either the ones that I built together with partners or startups that I worked for that have not succeeded. And I can say that there were more of those that didn't succeed rather than those that did succeed. And again, because there are so many of them, and because it's such an okay thing to do is to be in a startup and it closes down and okay, you move on. It's not a big deal in Israel. So I did have that experience. And I have to say that if I think back, I took some advice or some experience that I learned from in every one of the startups. If I start at the oldest one in the 90s. I think there was a problem of getting the money at the right time, for instance. And this is an advice that I say to many of the startups and entrepreneurs that I work with. Do not think that if you raised a round of money, it doesn't matter if it's pre-seed or Series C. Okay, even those that raise the millions and the dozens of millions. You raised an amount, and then you need to start working on your next round immediately. There's no room for relaxation in that sense. You cannot wait because it's so unknown, this environment, and it's so volatile. You cannot wait to the last minute before you start thinking about how you get your next round of funding. So that was what happened to the first one. It was just too late to raise money there. Too late. So that is one thing that I learned from this one. The next one that I was in was an interesting experience because it was a very exciting company. Beautiful idea. Something that was really, the CEO there managed to attract us. We were a group of like five people, really excited about the idea and everything. And him and his partner invented something that was really good, a software. And then after a while, we discovered that half of what he's telling us is lies. It's not true. It's just not what they did. They did maybe part of it, but half of what he promised was all, he sold us a PowerPoint idea, not really a software. And that's another thing. And I would say that to both sides, entrepreneur that build their own companies that are going to be CEOs of the company, but also employees that go to work in companies, in startups. For the entrepreneurs, I would say there's nothing more important than being honest with your people. There's nothing more important. You're a tiny group, usually, very close. You work a lot together. You have to trust each other. If you don't trust each other, if you are in a position that people will discover something that you promised and is not correct, or if you're lying, and that's true not just for the employees, it's also true for investors and for clients, etc. But the employees are the core of your business. Even if you have three of them, they are the most important asset you will have. And without them, you cannot go on. So that was one lesson learned from that company. And as an employee, what I would say, you need to be able to check it, to check what you promised. Be realistic. Don't go and follow someone's dream without really, just because you're excited. Don't fall in love too quickly just because you're excited. So that's the second advice I can get, I can give. Another advice I can give, and this is something else, and this I actually learned from the failure of our Swedish startup that was a really good idea but didn't succeed, is do not fall in love with your idea. This is something that I can say to most entrepreneurs. I mean, you have an idea, you really like it, you really want to invest your energy in it, and you want to raise money on it, and you need that dream, and you, but when you fall in love, you become blind. You become blind to difficulties that you might have or challenges that can make your startup fail and not handle them on time. And that is a shame. Don't be afraid of criticism. Don't be afraid to ask others what they think about your beloved baby. It is a beloved baby, but it will grow and it has its own character and its own faults, and you need to be aware of them. So be realistic, dream, but be realistic about how much you fall in love with your dream. So that's another th advice I can give to most startups, and that is, a personal a personal experience for me.
That's right, and I totally agree with you that when we have a business idea, if that idea starts from a passion, and this is a very well known, at least in Romania, but I've seen it in other countries as well, when people want to build a business, it's based on their own passion.
Yes.
So if it's already invested with this power, emotional power, it has attraction force on the market, but you exactly as you said before, when you look at your business as being your own baby, it's difficult to see its flaws, you know?
Oh,
So,
exactly. Exactly that's what I mean. It's difficult to see the flaws, but as a CEO, you really need to see the flaws. What I say to entrepreneurs when they start with the business and it goes on and they meet the challenges, I say to them, try to separate your entrepreneurship hat and CEO hat. To be honest with you, there's not a lot of people who can do that. But if you can do it to a certain extent, it will help you because you have to be critical yourself towards what you do with your startup. Otherwise, again, you think of it as a baby and it's always right and it's always good and there's no room for criticism, which is a problem.
That's right. I totally agree with you. And now, because we spoke about passions, transforming businesses, let's go back a bit to the Swedish entrepreneurial, to the Swedish business environment,
Yes.
and look at their innovative thinking in business, because I have a personal story here with Sweden. Back in 2008, if I remember well, I was attending an MBA classes, and there I had to build a project about the innovation in business, and I was fascinated about Sweden and their innovative thinking. So fascinated that I said I have to move there and to live there. But
Good.
and I started to learn Swedish as well. But in the end, I did not move. After a couple of years learning Swedish and getting in touch with the
Wow.
culture and going there several times, I did not move because I love the sunshine. So I said it's not the appropriate country for me.
Not in the winter, that's for sure.
That's for sure, exactly. The daylight, it's not enough for me. It's difficult for me to bear with the Romanian weather. So I understood that about myself, and I did not do that step. However, I'm still fascinated with their innovative thinking, and I would like you to tell us a bit more about this aspect, this cultural thing, because I think it's a cultural thing from my
It is.
perspective, but I would
Yeah.
like to hear it from you living there now.
Yes, absolutely. And I agree with you completely. There is a very unique, innovative thinking, as you say, a way to think about innovation here in Sweden, which I also am fascinated with. I think if I go back to something that I said before, for many years, Sweden is living in lagom, in this, conformist, equal. There's some good parts of that conformism because it's also allowed them to have a very well-educated society, good social services, an equal, more or less equal society for everyone. There are very good aspects of that conformism. But I think what is very unique about Sweden is that from very early age, they are educated for excellence. You can be a conformist, but they push everyone up at the same time. And excellence in everything you do, excellence in studies and excellence at work. And excellence in whatever you do. Excellence is a value. Excel, pick whatever you want to do. Be a carpenter, but excel in it. Be a driver, but excel in it. And I think this is a very unique kind of way of looking at life in Sweden. And I think this is also what pushes everyone towards that innovative thinking. Now, it's combined with an ability to think to the long term. Swedes they can run marathons in business. They have this long breath. They start a business. When I talk to entrepreneurs in Sweden, unlike entrepreneurs in Israel, for instance, I ask them about exit, and they don't know what to say about the exit, because for them, the highest thing they can get to is to build the next IKEA, is a company that will run for dozens of years with thousands of employees and have global success. If you ask an entrepreneur, this I'll say in parentheses, if you ask an entrepreneur in Israel about it, they would say they want to sell the company as quickly as possible to a big corporation and get the money back, which is okay, but it's a very different way of looking at life. Because in Sweden, they have this ability to say, okay, slowly, slowly, with planning, good planning, we will build an international company from this tiny idea. And the combination of these two things, the ability to sustain the long term, plus the ability to the strive for excellence, is what breeds that innovation. And another example that is really, it's the classic Swedish example, is the IKEA, because IKEA, they wanted to do something simple, which is another attribute of this culture, is to simplify life, is to do things as efficient as possible. And this is IKEA. They have a lot of wood. They want simple things that can be, do-it-yourself furniture. And this is how the IKEA brand started. And look where it got, thanks to this strive for excellence and long-term ability. So I think this is what is very unique in Sweden. Now, I think that these days, in the last, let's say, 5, 10 years, it's very evident that universities and government authorities recognize that innovative thinking and recognize that there is a good basis here to build unicorns and to build innovation and to push people who have these dreams forward. And there is a lot of support there. So it's beautiful to see how that, innovative thinking meets support from the authorities. And this is what makes it so nice to be here as an entrepreneur.
That's right, and I love the example with IKEA because they had an idea, a simple one. They built a huge. They planned very well.
Yes, absolutely.
They built it, and they become globally now as a brand for so many years. But what they also did, maybe they are not aware of, but IKEA became a mindset now because
Yes.
we used to furniture our places in a different way 20 years ago. But now, when we move from a flat to another, or we build a new home, or we want to change something, we say, what kind of style do you choose? The IKEA style. So,
Yes.
it's something that it's on our way of living, and it's all over the world, to be honest.
Yes. Yes. And it's interesting what you say, because IKEA, just one example of that, but you can give a lot of other examples for businesses like that that came from IKEA. Spotify is a Swedish company that changed the way that people listen to music. A Skype
Skype, yeah.
is the way people used to, video conference. That changed. I can think about even H&M is an example of how people think about fashion. It's the IKEA of fashion in many ways.
That's
It's like
right.
simplicity, frequent changing, keeping it simple and accessible to everyone. So, and this is, by the way, the same for Spotify and Skype, because it's the accessibility is making it accessible for everyone, simple for everyone. and just, wait the time until it becomes a standard. Have enough patience until it becomes a standard. Tetra Pak is another example of a Swedish company that changed the way that we package liquids, for instance.
But you know that
So,
Tetra Pak had an engineer that built that packaging that is Romanian?
oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's an interesting. I didn't know that.
It was my
Okay.
former boss and mentor so many years
Wow.
ago.
Wow, and he invented actually the
Yeah, the
Tetra Pak,
packaging.
the
Yes.
packaging. Wow.
Yes.
Well, that's something to learn. Then now you need to encourage the Romanian engineers to do it in Romania.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, so and I love the example with Spotify because we started this podcast on YouTube, but now we will move it to Spotify.
Exactly. And that's it's for me, it's really Spotify. I don't know if you've seen, there's actually a series about Spotify that is half reality, documentary, half
No, I didn't know.
drama. I can't remember the name, but it's really nicely showing the character of the entrepreneur that started Spotify, because he took this idea that was like a crazy idea, and everyone told him it's like it's bullshit, you can't do it. You cannot really keep music like that. You'll have problems. It won't work. But he insisted on that. And he said, no, it can work. And let me show you how. And this insistence is also something that is beautiful about it. But he also had the mind to take the right people with him who can make it into a reality. He picked exactly the complementary people for him that could make it into something, to challenge him and to complete the things that he didn't have for the business. So that's another good lesson to learn, how to complete yourself in a startup.
That's right, and to bring people on board that can help you r raise and grow your business because you cannot do it by yourself.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent examples and excellent lessons to be learned by our audience early. Now we are getting closer to our closure today. But I would like to ask you before closing our discussion, now that we already know that you've built so many businesses, let's imagine that you have to start from scratch today and to build a new business. Which country would you choose, Israel or Sweden?
Wow. Well, it's a bit of an unfair question now because Israel is in a difficult corner these days. But in terms of the culture, it's a good question. It's a good question. I might be, I might mix the two cultures. I might try to mix the two cultures because some of the things that I really like about the Swedish ecosystem, startup ecosystem, I would like to keep here. Something about this long term, I would say that probably if I built a startup, I would take the CEO from Sweden.
Okay.
Okay? Realistic people that know how to plan, that have the long, the, you know, can run for a long time, that have this sustainable, culture of business. That think about people, have a more social orientation to think about teams and the culture of the business. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, I think I might take, let's say it was a technological or healthcare medical device startup. Then I would probably take the engineers from Israel because there's still a lot of innovation and a lot of ability to come up with great ideas with no fear, not fearing what the other people will say, just run with wild ideas. And that is very typical to Israeli entrepreneurs and Israeli engineers and, people in the academia even. There's so many good ideas there that need that business environment. So I think the dream team would be a combination of it, the Israeli culture and the Swedish one.
Excellent. But now I said that we will close the discussion, but this gives me another idea for another question. If you would have to choose an industry today from scratch, which one would you choose to launch a new business?
Wow, that's a difficult question. I think I was lucky to have the opportunity to work with more than healthcare. I'm a coach for the European Commission, so I work with a lot of the startups in the EIC Accelerator and other startups. And there I have the opportunity to see more than medical device or med tech or things like that. So I think one of the businesses that is really craving for innovation is renewable energy. I think this is becoming urgent to build and have new ideas. And one of the problems that I see in that industry is that there's a lot of ideas. I'm not saying that it's empty, there's a lot of ideas there. But they're not quick enough, not for their fault. I mean, these technologies take a long time to prove and to realize. But if someone could make a jump, someone can come up with an idea that would shorten things in that perspective. Wow, I think that would be a great success. So that's one industry, I think. The other one, which I was lucky to have experience with, is femtech. I know it used to be a buzzword, now it's less of a buzzword, but I want to bring it back to the table because I think it's still. I mean, it was a buzzword. Everyone was talking about how, medicine is not equal to men and women. There are things that people don't understand still in healthcare about what women need, women's health, and special and differences between the genders. But I think that it wasn't exploited to the end. And I think there's still a lot of things that can be done there to make these, differences handled correctly in medicine, in healthcare. So I think that is also like a vast ocean that can be explored for many companies and entrepreneurs.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much, Orly, for everything that you've shared today with us. I really appreciate your vast experience. And today, in a short period of time, I learned and I have some new ideas. So I hope that our audience will take some notes from this beautiful discussion and from your experience as well.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure to participate in this podcast, and I look forward to any other questions. Just ask, go ahead and ask me.
Excellent. And we encourage our listeners actually to send us questions and maybe to you directly. And if it's needed later on, maybe we can organize another podcast to go into more details with you on certain specific topics.
Absolutely, with pleasure.
Thank you. To our listeners today, if you're looking to strengthen your business or navigate through challenges, we invite you to take these lessons and apply them to your journey. Don't miss the chance to explore the mentoring opportunities available in our community by accessing the links below. They could make all the difference, I can tell you. So if you like our podcast, make sure you subscribe to our channel by clicking the subscribe button below. And for now, thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.